I'm very happy now to welcome Mark Lee Gardner. He is the author of the new book, To Hell on a Fast Horse, Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, and the Epic Chase to Justice in the Old West. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. I'm glad to be a part of it today with you.
And we're looking forward to your being here in Santa Fe, and we'll tell people about your events in just a couple of minutes. But first, let's talk about this book. This is the first historical account that examines together the lives of Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett. How did you get interested in the subject and decide to write about both of them?
Well, I tell you, it actually started out, my interest was in Pat Garrett, and I was fascinated, you know, by his life, especially the years after he killed Billy the Kid. He had all kinds of ups and downs, and he was murdered in 1908, which a lot of people don't know about. But then it morphed into this dual biography, and it was really a suggestion from my agent. He said, you know, what about both of them together? And then the more I thought about it, I thought, yeah, it's a brilliant idea because, you know, they're really one of the few classic duos in American history where they made each other. There'd be no Billy the Kid without Pat Garrett, and there'd be no Pat Garrett without Billy the Kid.
Let's talk about each one of them. And, of course, Billy the Kid is sort of the beloved, what would you call him, sort of anti-hero. He was an Anglo guy. He spoke, as you say, spoke Spanish and rode like an Apache.
Yes.
How did he, and he died very young. How did he become who he was? What was his early life like?
Well, you know, he started out, I think, a lot like any other normal, typical young American boy of the 19th century. He was born just before the Civil War erupted. He may have lost his father in the Civil War, who, you know, he may have been a, we don't really know, he may have been a Civil War soldier in an Indiana regiment, but he ended up growing up like lots of other boys in a household, you know, operated by a single mom, you know, a single mom, and he had a brother, and eventually they, like a lot of Americans after the Civil War, head out west, and first they're Wichita, then Denver, then Santa Fe, and they end up in Silver City, and his mother dies when he's about 15. And Billy's kind of on his own, and he was actually on his own a little before then because his mother suffered from tuberculosis. His stepfather wasn't real interested in them. And when you're on your own, the places that, you know, that are fun to hang out in are the saloons and gambling houses, and he starts, you know, hanging out with the wrong crowd.
And where does his life go from there? How does he survive?
Well, he survives just what you mentioned before. I mean, he learns to survive Old West style. He learns New Mexican Spanish fluently. He learns how to play poker in Spanish Monte. He learns how to operate a six-shooter. He kills his first man in Arizona in a basically a barroom scuffle, saloon scuffle, flees back to New Mexico and gets involved in the Lincoln County War. His friend, one of his really a good friend and employer, John Henry Tunstall, when he's murdered in the Lincoln County War, Billy swears revenge. And Billy's a very vindictive lad, and he gets that revenge a few times before everything's said and done.
What was New Mexico, and specifically Lincoln County, what were they like in that period post-Civil War?
Well, it was pretty much up for, I guess the phrase, up for grabs, and I mean that in not just in a sense of land or settlement, but economically it was up for grabs, and there was one controlling faction called the House who controlled the economic and the business of this huge county, which was the largest in the United States at that time, and John Henry Tunstall and his partner Alexander McSween were going to be competitors with the House, and basically it turned violent. They started killing one another in order to keep, you know, to see who's going to be the leader or at least the main business operation in Lincoln County, and Billy gets swept up in that.
And he, as you say, he was a cattle rustler, he was an outlaw. How did he become so well-known and so well-loved?
Well, that's the fascinating thing I found out about Billy the Kid. I was really surprised as I got into it at how well-loved he was, especially by the native New Mexican population. And, you know, he is picked up by the newspapers, and especially towards the end of his career when he makes his brazen daylight escape and kills his two guards from the Lincoln County Jail. But the thing was is that he had this amazing personality. He had charisma. He was a natural-born leader of sorts, and he made a good story. I mean, he's this, you know, very young kid. In fact, when he's killed, he's 21, and there was the legend that, you know, he had killed a man for each year of his life. That wasn't true. But there was a certain yellow journalism popularity there with this idea of Billy the Kid, the outlaw that nobody could stop. And then there was the real-life thing where he was actually, you know, beloved as an individual by those who were close to him, again, by his friends and by the native New Mexican population. I think part of that is that, you know, he was embarrassing the sheriffs and the gringo posses and judges that, you know, weren't really being very sympathetic to the native population at that time.
We're talking to Mark Lee Gardner about his book, To Hell on a Fast Horse. Now let's talk about Pat Garrett. He was originally from Alabama. How did he find his way to New Mexico?
Well, as I say in the book, he got to New Mexico in a roundabout way, just like Billy the Kid. He was born in Alabama to a southern planter, and they ended up moving around. They settled before the war, a civil war, in Louisiana. And Pat Garrett's father is probably the most prominent planter, the most prominent citizen of Claiborne Parish. He built the courthouse for the parish. But the Civil War ruined everything for that family. I mean, Pat Garrett had basically a privileged existence growing up, and that was all gone with the war. They lost all their property. And Pat Garrett strikes out west and first ends up in Texas, becomes a buffalo hunter. And then after he helps exterminate all the bison, he shows up at Fort Sumner and becomes a fixture there.
What was Billy the Kid first arrested for that he was, well, what was he arrested for which he was sentenced to death before he escaped?
Well, that was the famous murder trial with for the death of Sheriff James, or, I'm sorry, Sheriff William Brady during the Lincoln County War. And Billy was, you know, it's interesting, Billy wasn't the only one that was took a hand in that killing. There were several regulators that fired, you know, across the street at Brady and his deputies, and there were Billy was indicted for the murder as well as three others, but Billy is the only one that ends up being tried and convicted of the crime, and that's what he is, that's what he most feared originally, and he tried to get a pardon through Governor Lew Wallace. Actually, you know, he held up his end of the bargain to get that pardon, and Governor Wallace didn't. But when the pardon doesn't come through and Pat Garrett gets elected, you know, with the promise he's going to put a stop to the outlaw ways of Billy the Kid, then Pat Garrett, you know, takes him and gets him locked up. He's taken to trial, and then he ends up back in Lincoln County where he's under Garrett's care until his breakout in April of 1881.
And then a manhunt ensues.
Yes. Yeah, you know, it's Pat Garrett was, if you know, of all things, he was determined. He was dogged. And if he promised to do something, he would do it at great risk to himself. I mean, danger was not something that affected him. Now, he admitted that there were many times when he was scared. He could get scared just like anybody else, but that wasn't going to stop him from pursuing and capturing Billy the Kid. And he actually, I think this is really amazing, he's elected in November of 1880, so he's not officially the county sheriff until January of 1881, but he doesn't wait. You know, he's made this promise, and he's raring to go out there after Billy the Kid, so the sheriff that's currently in charge makes Garrett a deputy and says, go for it. And Garrett and his posses surround Billy the Kid at Stinking Spring, which is just east of Fort Sumner. And in December of 1880, they capture the famous Billy the Kid, which makes national headlines.
And what happened after that?
Well, that's when we talk about the trial. I mean, Garrett gets Billy to jail, and Billy is transported to Mesilla, where the murder trial takes place. Billy is then transported back to Garrett's care, and he's supposed to be executed by hanging on Friday, the unlucky day, Friday, May 13th, in Lincoln. But before that can happen, in April, Garrett is away from town collecting taxes. That was the job of county sheriffs at that time, was to collect the county taxes. And he's under the care of two guards. One's Bob Ollinger, who did not like Billy, and Billy did not like him. And Bob Ollinger was accurately portrayed, has been accurately portrayed as a bully. He was. And then James Bell, who Billy the Kid somewhat liked. And while Ollinger is across the street feeding the other prisoners from the courthouse jail, Billy is able to surprise Bell and kills him. And Bob Ollinger hears the gunshot, runs across the street, and right underneath Billy's window, the jail cell on the second floor, Billy yells down, "Hello, Bob," and gives him two loads from his 10-gauge shotgun.
But Billy the Kid, not too long after that, winds up on the wrong end of a gun, although he does hide out pretty well for a while.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, Garrett was criticized for the way Garrett seemed to be slow in getting after the Kid right after those two deputies were murdered. And, you know, Garrett was taking his time. If Billy was in the territory, he wanted him to get comfortable. He wanted to slip in there unawares when Billy was least expecting it. You know, we wanted Billy to get comfortable. And that's indeed what happens. And Garrett arrives at Fort Sumner with only two deputies. He didn't take a giant old posse because there were so many kid sympathizers that too many men know the word could get out and Billy would be gone. So he takes two trusted deputies, that's all he has with him, and arrives at Fort Sumner on July 14, 1881. He sends in John Poe first to kind of get the lay of the land and to see if he can hear anything. And Poe notices how suspicious everyone is, and Poe has his own suspicions that the kid is around. And they later, all three, come back about midnight or a little before midnight, and Pat Garrett is in Pete Maxwell's bedroom at Fort Sumner, you know, the famous confrontation that has been filmed a gazillion times. And while Garrett is talking to Maxwell, Billy shows up at the Maxwell house, and he sees the two deputies, and he panics. You know, he doesn't know who these strangers are, and he starts shouting, "Keyness, Keyness, you know, who is it?" He jumps up on the porch, races into Maxwell's bedroom, and he approaches the bed, sees the shadowy figure next to Maxwell, and he jumps back, raises his gun. And again, you know, Billy had some humanity. I mean, you know, he didn't just shoot right away because he didn't know who these people were. They might have been a friend of Maxwell, but that humanity of Billy, that hesitation, cost him his life. As Pat Garrett recognizes his voice, pulls his revolver and shoots one shot, hits Billy in the chest. It's a mortal wound. Garrett fires another shot as he's racing out of the room, and so is Pete Maxwell. And as Garrett gets outside the building, John Poe is up there with his gun, and he gets ready to point his gun at Maxwell, and Garrett says, "Don't shoot Pete," you know, and he says, I came on the kid in there, and I think I've got him." And he, sure enough, he got Billy the Kid.
So after that, Pat Garrett was a hero for having vanquished Billy the Kid, but soon after that, there was other kinds of talk, and he was considered not so much of a hero, to the point where he actually wrote a book in his own defense of the account.
Yes, that's correct. You know, it's one of the sad, I think it's a tragedy, what happens to Pat Garrett, because initially he is hailed in the press. I mean, this makes international headlines when he kills Billy the Kid. And, you know, most New Mexicans who did not know Billy, you know, and all they read was what was in the papers, you know, they thought Billy the Kid was this heinous serial killer, and they were so relieved that he was no longer on the face of the earth, and they celebrated Garrett. They threw money at Garrett. I mean, they gave him all, you know, beyond the reward promised by the territory, people, you know, put together funds to give Garrett money. But as time went on, there were the whispers, you know, as to how Billy was killed, and some said, "Oh, Billy didn't have a gun," and others were upset because Garrett didn't give Billy a chance to kill him, you know, like the sheriff. "Okay, Billy, you get the shot first, and then after you shoot, then I'm going to try to kill you." But as you know, Garrett knew that once Billy killed the two guards, that when they met again, it was going to be either Garrett or the Kid. But nevertheless, over time, Billy's stature grows. He becomes the Robin Hood of the Southwest, especially in the 20th century with all these films and the you know, popular stories about Billy the Kid. And if you've got a hero in your outlaw, well, the man that kills that hero, you know, he's going to become the villain. And that's what happens to Pat Garrett. That's the tragedy that I refer to, is that it happened within Garrett's own lifetime.
Well, you pointed to places where he'd been held up alongside John Wilkes Booth and Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes, I mean, I found that, you know, fairly outrageous that Pat Garrett is in a book called The Book of Assassins, along with men who killed, you know, our beloved presidents. And, you know, he was a duly elected county sheriff, and he risked his life as a county sheriff to stop Billy the Kid. Nobody else had been willing to do that. And you know, and again, the tragedy is that in his later years, he's cast aside. When he has financial troubles and political troubles, they don't need Pat Garrett all of a sudden, you know. They needed him at one point when he was the man for the job, but they don't remember that at the end of his life when he could use the territory's help.
Now, the book reads like it's a very vivid account of this whole story and goes on beyond the death of Billy the Kid. How did you recreate all of this? I mean, there's so much sorting out, I would think, you have to do between fact and legend.
Oh, well, yes. Well, thanks. I mean, it was meant to be a vivid account, and you're exactly right. That was probably the most challenging aspect of writing this book, was that there are so many episodes that involve Billy the Kid where you have completely contradictory accounts as to what happened. And what I tried to do was, you know, looking at all the evidence, and I picked the scenario or episode or account, the first-hand account, that I felt was the most accurate, and went with that. But in the notes in the back of the book, I explained that, you know, these are other possibilities This is why I went with the version that's in the book, but these are other possibilities as to what happened. I didn't really put much credence sometimes in the other possibilities, but I felt like, you know, if a person is, you know, gets excited after reading this story and they want to pursue it and get into it in depth, you know, the sources are there, and they can go to them and make a decision for themselves.
Now, you are, among many other things, a musician, and we're going to hear a song that you are performing that you wrote in a moment about Billy the Kid, but tell us about the musical part of your life.
Sure. Well, you know, I've always been interested in history, but as a young man, I've always been interested in Americana music or roots music, and I picked up the banjo when I was in college, and my first summer jobs were with the National Park Service, and I took my five-string bluegrass banjo to work at Bent's Fort in southern Colorado. That's 1846 is the year they represent, and I quickly discovered that the music of Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys was not what they were playing on the frontier in the 1840s, and that really got me excited, so that I had kind of these dual paths. As I got deeper into working as a professional historian, I also studied the historic music of America's past, and to the point where, you know, I wanted the vintage instruments, I wanted to play the same styles that were played historically, and that's what I do today. I travel, you know, around the country with a guy named Rex Rideout, who plays fiddle and mandolin and all kinds of stuff, and we present the music of the American West as it was played, you know, during the 19th century and early 20th century parts of American history.
Now, you, Mark Lee Gardner, will be here on Thursday, the 25th of February at the Santuario de Guadalupe at 7 in the evening, and you'll be doing a performance called Billy the Kid in Story and Song. That's part of Las Golondrinas lecture series, so we'll get to hear your music at that event.
Yes, and what that's going to be is I'm going to perform songs that were associated with Billy, things that we know that he liked that from accounts that were left by fellow regulators and others. So we'll hear songs that we know Billy the Kid danced to at New Mexican Bailes. And then the second part of the program is going to be, you know, the legend, the songs that were written about Billy the Kid, you know, even stuff, you know, by Bob Dylan, because he wrote the soundtrack for the Sam Peckinpah film, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, from 1973.
And you'll be at the Fray Angelico Chavez Library at noon the next day, Friday the 26th of February. Both of those are free events. Mark Lee Gardner is the author of the book To Hell on a Fast Horse, Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, and the Epic Chase to Justice in the Old West. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. I hope to see you there when I'm out there.
Absolutely.
Oh, that finger of Billy the Kid, what a heap of harm it did. But when Billy died, the finger died too, and was buried beneath the morning dew. No more to pull his six-gun true, the finger of Billy the Kid. But one day up Chicago way, I heard a sideshow feller say, just step this way and for a dime you'll see the trigger finger of Kid Billy. What has pulled 100 massacres, the finger of Billy the Kid. Well, I knew that feller, he lied like a snake, and that his finger was a fake. But I paid my dime to see the show, for I was a friend of Billy's. I'll have you know, he did me a favor in New Mexico. The outlaw Billy the Kid. I followed the crowd into the hall, saw the finger preserved in Alki Hall. Then I pulled my gun so none could tell, and I blowed that thing clear into hell, and gave a yip and a mighty yell, hurrah for Billy the Kid. Of course they threw me into jail, from where a letter I did mail to Sheriff Pat Garrett, who killed the kid. And I told him what I'd gone and did, and to tell me quick if he got rid of the finger of Billy the Kid. Well, old Pat came back quick and hot, and in a few words he said a lot. The trigger finger of young Billy is still upon his dead body. I know, because I dug to see the finger of Billy the Kid. Billy can hear from his Dolby shack. I reckon he knows I paid him back for the favor he did me when my voice was stilled by thirst and hunger, and my body he filled with buffalo meat that had been killed by the finger of Billy the Kid. Thank you. We'll see you in a few minutes.